Kel is a new confinement system for the web. Now, I know most of you still have websites that look like this. So I know that most of you have websites that look like this, but the web has actually changed from just a statically kind of way of publishing content. In fact, the web has turned into the new application platform. So today we have a lot of client-side functionality kind of implemented in the browser with JavaScript. And a part of the reason that the web has become so popular and kind of the de facto app platform is because it's become really easy to build these client-side applications, right? We can just take third-party code and we can take some data and kind of give you a whole new functionality. And right, these apps kind of handle our political information, they handle our banking data, they also know where we live and buy coffee from. Wait, but we have third-party code and we have sensitive data, and this is all running within one application, our browser. So what do browsers do today to ensure that, say, like your weather website that you have open in one tab can't access your bank statement, which might be open in, say, a separate tab? They have to address this issue, right? And they do, right? Today we have, say, the same origin policy. So the idea behind the same origin policy is to isolate content from different origins. So here I have two kind of browsing contexts, and this is kind of what browsers use to compartmentalize code. So a browsing context is, say, a tab, an iframe, and so forth. I'm going to use kind of iframes as kind of the default notion of a context. And in here we have, say, our chase and our weather, and they can both talk to each other's servers. But what the same origin policy basically says is that if your weather kind of context wants to look at your bank data, that's a no-go. So you should not be able to read my banking information. The problem with the same origin policy is that it's kind of broken in two fundamental ways on two sides of the spectrum. For one, it's not strict enough. So code running in a browsing context can just look at your bank statement and just disclose it, right? And what's even worse, when we take libraries like, let's say, jQuery, these libraries run with the privilege of the page, so they can just look at your bank statement and disclose it to whomever they want. So maybe in this case we have chase.com with some malicious code, and now this malicious code will take our statement and leak it to evil.biz. On the other side of the spectrum, we have the limitation of the same origin policy, which is flexibility, right? So we don't have privacy, but we also don't have flexibility. So say we want to build an application that takes our chase information and takes our HSBC bank statement and maybe gives us a pie chart saying where we spend all our money on. We can't build this today in a secure way because we can't actually access cross-origin information. And browser vendors know about this, so they've addressed the issue with two kind of standards. One is CSP, or Content Security Policy, and this is addressing the privacy issue, right? So as a web developer, now you can specify that your page should only talk to a set of origins, right? So you whitelist the origins you trust. So now if there's malicious code in your chase.com kind of browsing context, it can't leak it to evil.biz because you probably didn't whitelist evil.biz. So that's the privacy kind of solution. The flexibility solution is provided by CORS, or cross-origin resource sharing. And the idea here is also kind of very similar. So as a server provider, what I do is I whitelist the origins that I trust. So maybe as HSBC, I trust mint.cc. And now when I get a request from a browsing context from mint.cc, it can look at this response and maybe give me some information about my bank statement in a different way. Now, if we step back and look at the same origin policy, CSP, and CORS, they're all a form of discretionary access control. And as it turns out, DAC is actually not good enough for the web. And the reason it's not good enough is because it forces us to choose between functionality and privacy. So as a concrete example to show you that this functionality privacy trade-off, let's look at a mint.com-like website that's implemented purely client-side, right? So here, mint.cc, our third-party web app, is going to take our chase and our HSBC information and kind of combine the data to give us a pie chart or a bar graph saying that we're definitely spending way too much money on coffee. Now, to implement this today, we have to either give up privacy or give up a functionality, right? So to get privacy, what a bank might do is say mint.cc should not have access to this information, right? What this means is that we can't actually build mint.cc. If we want functionality, so if we want this app, well, the bank should just kind of give up our data to mint.cc. And what I mean by give up, well, if it gives a mint.cc access to this information, because of the way the current browser architecture is designed, once you have access to this data, you can do whatever you want. So if mint, say, imports a library that's buggy or malicious, it can leak your bank statement. What's actually worse is, since banks do care about our privacy, they don't allow mint.cc to read our data. So as users who want to use mint.cc, well, we're just going to give them our bank credentials and let them get our data that way. In fact, this is kind of exactly what happens with the server-side mint.com application. So we don't even have a trade-off between functionality and privacy. We're just giving up privacy for functionality. And mint.com is not the only place where we do this, right? So DAC is not good enough for other kinds of third-party mashups. for scenarios where we have, say, two parties that don't trust each other, or even when we build applications that require third-party libraries such as jQuery that are tightly integrated into the page. Actually, what's even worse is we can't even securely include, say, third-party libraries that have a very narrow API, like, say, a password strength checker. So let's actually look at this. On the bottom here, I have two browsing contexts. One is chase.com, which has, say, some password, and this website wants to use a third-party strength checker provided by sketchy.ru. Now, this third-party library might actually want to, say, access the network to get a list of common passwords. But Chase wants the guarantee that once it gives it a password, it can't actually leak this information. So DAC is definitely not good enough because we have untrusted code and we have sensitive data, right? So what we need is confinement, right? Like, it's totally safe for this password strength checker to get a list of passwords, but once it actually decides to look at the password, then it should not be able to communicate arbitrarily, right? So in a Mac world, what would happen is once sketchy.ru is done fetching a list of passwords, well, it's going to give up its communication privileges. Then Chase can actually say, here's the password. Sketchy.ru can't perform any requests now, but it can do the actual computation and reply back with, well, this is a weak password. Now, you've all probably seen a lot of confinement papers over the last few years. So isn't this a solved problem? Can't we use, say, the confinement idea from Hales, just take Haskell, put it in the browser, or can we just do confinement for Java, use GIF, or actually, you know what, there's a lot of work on confinement for changing JavaScript engines, so why don't we just take something like JS Flow and implement that into the browser? Well, your average web developer is just going to say, what the hell is going on? Like, I'm not going to use Hales or GIF or the crazy semantics. So we need a set of kind of design constraints. We have to scope the problem. So for one, we can't expect developers to learn a new language. We also can't trust we can't change the JavaScript runtime engine, right? These are highly optimized JITs, and like even adding, say, one instruction to the hot path, it's kind of like the guys at Mozilla and Google are saying, would mean there's no way we can get this into the upstream. And developers already have a notion of security, right? So they know that the principle is an origin, and they kind of already know that there's these boundaries called origins or pages and so forth. And so we can change this mental model that they have ingrained. The good news is by accident, the web turns out to be a pretty good fit for confinement if you just look at it kind of from the right angle. And what do I mean by the right angle? Well, for one, browsers already have a notion of an execution context, and these execution contexts are used to isolate content from different origins, right? So maybe we can actually use these contexts to enforce mandatory access control or confinement at this granularity. So let's use context. And what we learned from, say, the BFlow paper is that, like, if we choose this kind of coarse-grained approach, well, we don't actually need to change the language runtime. So that's a huge win. The other good news is that these browsers are kind of changing every day, so there's new APIs coming out, so we can easily add a new DOM-level API, for example, to attach policies to messages, as I'll show you in a few slides. Okay, so Cal kind of takes these ideas and applies them to kind of key concepts that kind of we already know about, but don't really know how to use in a practical way, right? So we know about labels, we know about label communication, we even know about privileges. What's different? Well, how do we set labels in a general confinement system? We have no idea. Well, in the context of the web, we can actually just use origins to specify these MAC policies. We can use context to enforce security across these boundaries. In fact, what we even want is to not have to change the existing communication APIs, right? So as a developer today, I'm using PostMessage. If you're going to make me change from PostMessage, I'm going to say no. I'm sorry. I don't want to do that. And we can also kind of reuse the notion that's of trust that exists in existing browsers, right? So we know that an origin is a way of thinking about trust, so let's use that to actually encode privileges. Okay, with these kind of in mind, I want to just go a little bit into the first two and then refer you to the paper for how we actually deal with privileges. Okay, so labels. As in every other confinement system, a label is the thing that we use to protect data. What's different in Cal is that labels are specified in terms of origins who care about this data. So for example, on the bottom here, I have, say, a chase.com context, and this has a password. Well, I want to say that this information is sensitive to chase.com, so I'm going to use this new API called label and say that this is sensitive to chase.com. Maybe later on, we're going to have information from HSBC as well, and we want to say that this information is sensitive to both Chase and HSBC. How do we do this? Well, naturally, just say label Chase and HSBC, so we have the concern of both parties. And Cal associates labels kind of at this context granularity, but you can think of a web server, at least at this level as on other contexts. So servers themselves also have labels. Okay, so we track labels at the context granularity, which means now all your pages now have labels, all your iframes, your workers, and so forth have labels with them.
And we've kind of seen this before, this coarse-grained approach. What makes CAL different is that now we also can let pages, say JavaScript code in the page, or even servers, associate labels with messages, right? So when I send you my password, I can say, this password is sensitive to chase.com. And this is kind of the right way to share information, as opposed to thinking about just context labels. Okay, so we have labels. Let's actually do something with them, right? So what do we need to do? Well, where we have these contexts, they have labels, so we have to ensure that these labels are obeyed end to end, right? So the first thing we need to do is make sure that when we send a message from, say, a context label chase.com to a server labeled sketchy.ru, if this message is a password, well, this flow should not be allowed, right? So CAL should stop this communication from happening. Okay, but the browser has many contexts, so maybe we have a context from sketchy.ru, so this is our library running in a separate context, and this library is labeled public. So naturally, you can talk to sketchy.ru to fetch a list of passwords, right? So one thing we have to do is make sure that within the browser, we're not violating the kind of the constraint we set before, which is that the password should not be allowed to be sent to a sketchy.ru web server, right? Because if we're allowing it within browser, then transitively, we allow it externally as well. But okay, so I've just showed you how to not communicate. And what I really want is for chase.com to use this password strength checker and actually have it compute on our data. So how do we do that? Well, a context can adjust its label to read more sensitive information. So how do you do this? Well, you add an origin to your label. Now you can read information from this origin at the cost of not being able to talk to other contexts that don't have this origin in its label. So let's look at the password strength checker kind of end to end. So we start out with two contexts. We have one from chase.com that has a password in it, and we have our library, sketchy.ru, which is also public and can now fetch, say, a list of passwords. Now, as Chase, when I want to use this library, what do? Well, I label the message and send it over to sketchy.ru context. This gets kind of placed in the context of sketchy.ru, but note that it can still talk to the network, right? I haven't stopped it from doing that. And the reason for this is because these labeled messages are kind of opaque. Sketch.ru can only check what the label of this password is. It can't look at the actual content. Once it's done fetching, say, a list of passwords, it can decide to actually like do a computation. So maybe it wants to look at the password. It attaches the chase.com origin to its label and now has the actual password in its context. But note, now it can't actually talk to the network anymore. So it can't talk to sketchy.ru, but it can perform the computation that it needs to and reply back with an actual response. Now, those are the two kind of big ideas. And like I think like if you step back and look at these contexts and label messages and using origins to assign labels, well, the web was kind of more or less made for confinement by accident. Right? So origins are a natural way of specifying labels. And we can leverage these existing contexts as kind of boundaries between which we send these mixed granularity labeled messages, right? So we don't have to be completely coarse-grained. We can attach labels with these messages. And finally, like one thing that I lied to you about in the previous example is the chase.com context should not be able to look at a labeled response without the notion of privileges. So the notion of privilege, let's say chase.com make its own data public or avoid getting kind of confined when reading its own data. Okay, so that's kind of the summary of the CAL design from a zoomed out angle. What can we do with this? Well, let's actually look at our client-side Mint application. So again, just to remind you, our client-side Mint application is a read-only client-side personal finance service, right? So we want to take your Chase information, your HSBC data, and give you kind of a pie chart saying where you're spending all your money on. Now with CAL, how do we implement this? Well, the banks can make the bank statements available. All they have to do is actually label them. So set a looser DAC policy at the cost of ensuring that the Mint CC context is confined. So we're going to send the Mint CC when it makes a request a labeled response. Now this labeled response is just placed into the scope of the Mint CC application and the same from, say, HSBC. So we're going to send it to bank statement. Now when Mint CC is done fetching all your bank statements, it can start to actually look at them and perform some computation, right? So first we're going to say look at our chase.com bank statement. What does this mean? Well, we've added this label to our, we've added this origin to our label. We can no longer talk to, say, hsbc.com, right? Doing so might leak chase.com information. And finally, when we also look at the hsbc.com information, well, now we give up all communication privileges. So we can't talk to anybody anymore, but what we can do is give you a pie chart as we like originally wanted, saying where you spend your money, right? So by loosening this discretionary access control policies and kind of leveraging Mac, we can actually get both flexibility and privacy without completely trusting Mint.com. Okay, so we actually built the system Cal for both Firefox and Chromium, and we did so at the DOM level. So what do I mean? Well, we modified the Gecko and Blink layout engines, but we did not touch at all the JavaScript runtime engine. So the JavaScript runtime engine is vanilla. There's no code there. And at the same time, we were able to do this without, modifying existing communication APIs. So when you talk in between contexts, you're actually getting like the standard API that you'd be using normally, right? So you have basically post message. All you can do now is additionally say what the label of this message is, right? So as chase.com, I can send a message and say the label of this message should be chase.com. So please compute on it when you're actually ready. And the same thing goes with the XML HTTP request constructor, right? So we use XHR to talk to servers. What did we do? Well, the only thing that we added was a new response type, right? So now a server can say what the label of a response is, and a context can incorporate this kind of, again, as a labeled message. Now, the important thing about implementation is it's fully backwards compatible. So what do I mean? Well, if you're not using the Cal API, you're not going to get confinement. And basically, only when you start to use one of our APIs will confinement mode be turned on, and now you get confinement in addition to, say, the same emergent policy, CSP, and cores. And to give you kind of a rough scale of like the size of the implementation, well, it's roughly 4,000 lines of C++ code for both Blink and Gecko, but we think we can actually get this even smaller if we move some of the shifted things into to JavaScript. Okay, so I told you about the implementation. What's the performance of Cal? So first off, what do we actually like care about? Well, one, we care about the performance or overhead of securing an existing mashup. So if you have a mashup that you just want to add labels to, what's the cost of doing that? What's the cost of, say, not using script tags and instead using compartments, right? So I want to use compartments now to privilege separate my code. What's the cost of doing this? Finally, suppose I don't actually even want to use Cal, what's the cost of on existing websites by just having added Cal to the browser? Well, I'm going to answer first the last one, which is basically there's no performance overhead because we're mostly independent of the existing kind of hot paths. For the other two, what's the overhead of Cal? Well, we implemented a few end-to-end applications, and in the worst case scenario for our encrypted document editor, which is a mashup, on running on LoopX, so there's no network latency, and the application doesn't actually do anything interesting with the DOM, and moreover just kind of like stresses the Cal API, the performance is roughly 16%. This is 16 milliseconds. So 60%, 16% sounds huge, but when you look at the absolute number, it's tiny, and when you account for latency and for everything else that a real application would have, well, this relative overhead is tiny. To evaluate the applicability of Cal, we've kind of implemented four different kinds of applications that follow common patterns that developers do today but don't have a way of doing securely. And kind of one of the things that we also wanted to look at, what is the deployability of the system, right? Like one of the motivations is that we don't want to change a lot of the existing infrastructure. So is Cal deployable? To kind of think about this, like we had a few questions, and basically like the answers are yes, it is more or less like deployable. And the reason for it is because, well, one, we're backwards compatible, right? So we don't enforce confinement for existing pages and only do so for people which use this new API. Also, in terms of getting this out there to developers, well, we're using a lot of existing concepts, right? So we're using origins and contexts, and we expect that developers are already familiar with this, that they can just kind of pick up Cal. Finally, we've demonstrated that this design is implementable for major web browsers, and kind of we've managed to do so without changing the JavaScript engine. There are, of course, some limitations. So for one, we don't deal with covert channels, and this is pretty common with most confinement systems. The one difference with Cal is that we additionally like take the existing web model and just add MAC to it, right? So we're still going to enforce the same origin policy, but now if you're using the API, you also get mandatory access control. That said, malicious code can still leak information through covert channels. The more interesting kind of limitation is compartmentalization. So with Cal, you can't just take an existing application, set the label for the password, and say go. You actually have to think about how do you restructure your application, how do you label things given this kind of coarse-grained approach. And we kind of want to tackle this mostly in our related work. In our future work. As for related work, there's two kind of things that I want to point out. The closest ones are bflow and jsflow. So bflow is a coarse-grained information flow control system for the browsers. The key distinction is that they were mainly concerned about untrusted code. We additionally handle the mutually distrusting case, so things we can additionally say support mashups and secure mashups.
JSFlow is a fine-grained information flow control system, which means that it's better suited for, say, thinking about libraries like jQuery, but it does require you to think about new semantics and also has a basically 100 times slowdown. To conclude, I just want to kind of get back at the original idea of this project, which was today we're giving up privacy for flexibility, and the fundamental reason for this is because modern web apps need to compute on sensitive data and they integrate third-party code. And while DAC is crucial for the web, it's not enough. So CAL is a new confinement system that provides mandatory access control for existing web apps, and it does so by naturally extending the existing web model. And with that, I'll point you to the website. We're going to deploy the code soon and hope to see you guys use it. Thanks.
This might be more in the way of a comment, but there's covert channels and there's covert channels, and I can send the password to something and have it send back a message to one of two things. They're opaque messages, but it tells me a bit. I just keep repeating this, I get the entire password.
Yes, you're absolutely right. So should you be worried about covert channels? If you loosen your DAC policy, absolutely right. So what would you do today? Today, it's not that you get a covert channel, you leaked a whole password immediately, right? So this is kind of saying, I have some sensitive information. I don't necessarily find the other piece of code to be totally malicious. If it is, then I'm mostly screwed. But it's still better than what we do today, which is kind of either give it in full or don't even use.
Right? There's covert channels when I have to do a timing attack, or I have to do some work to make the cache less readable, and there's a probabilistic leakage. But this is not covert. I'm just out and out decoding it.
That's still, I think that would be still a covert channel per definition, right? Because it's not an overt channel where you have an API saying, here's the message.
I can give you an API to decode the password.
Absolutely. So what we're trying to do with CAL is kind of close all the overt channels that we have today and make sure that developers don't use ad hoc measures like asking users for their passwords when they want to use an application. All we're saying is you don't have to trust mint.com in full. You shouldn't trust it in full. But with CAL, now you get the additional benefit that you don't need to trust the library that it uses, right? So you can
sure
make sure
I
that
it's
not in full, right? I guess
you could download. I mean, if you make this public, there'll be a downloadable app that basically does decoding.
Okay. Hi, Mike Peter in Princeton. Hey. Very much like this work. So typically, one of the hard problems with these mandatory access control systems is also declassification. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, is it just that actually you happen to be lucky, or this whole web area is interesting, and that you actually don't have to worry about it because browsers are stateless between each request? Or did you ever come across apps where you have to think about declassification?
For sure, we definitely do. The thing is, the declassification is almost easier here because ischase.com have ownership of my own data, right? So implicitly, whenever I want to read data at labelchase.com, I'm kind of declassifying that data that's coming into my context. The only time I need to really think about it is when I send you some information, so when I want to make something public. And in that case, again, because we're at the level of a model that is at the origins, that people already know how to think about, it becomes kind of an easier thing to reason about. Does that?
I think so. Thanks.
Okay.
Have you considered the usability issue of failing open versus failing closed before universal deployed?
So by default, CAL will just enforce MAC on top of existing discretionary access control. So by default, you cannot say just get at your bank data, right? The user has to opt in much in the same way that today they would give a password, but with CAL they would just say, please let Mint, please loosen the core's whitelisting for Mint.
So if Chase.com started using the CAL API today, and maybe two browsers, or maybe 200 users are using CAL in their browsers, what about the rest of the users? It would just fail down to the discretionary?
That's right. It would just fail down to basically not allowing, or whatever the website is doing, which pretty much for Chase would be not allow, right?
Okay, let's take Dan.